Welcome back to the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is powered by TD Ameritrade. Every stroke counts on the scorecard and every penny counts in the market. That's why TD Ameritrade is committed to straightforward pricing with no surprises, so you're free to swing with confidence. Visit tdameritrade.com/friedegg. Member SIPC. Welcome back to part two of our podcast with Ryan French from Monday Q. If you missed part one, be sure to check it out. We dive a little into Ryan's story and how he got started with the Twitter account and website, Monday Qualifier Info. In part two, we take a deep dive into some of the lesser known qualifiers for the U.S. Open, which is up next week. It's crazy how fast it came. This new schedule's kind of got major after major. So, yeah, it's U.S. Open essentially week starting this weekend as we get ready for the season's third major championship. You'll learn about some of the guys that hopefully one or two of them make a run this weekend. So thanks for Ryan again, and enjoy part two of our conversation.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
What's the sentiment? I think this is like one of the most ridiculous things, and this is probably a good transition into talking about, you know, U.S. Open players and sectionals that just happened. But what's the pulse on like the fact that the web.com scheduled, again, last year they didn't have one, but the year before they had one, schedule an opposite event of the U.S. Open, like the national open, the open where anybody can win, and web.com players are now being forced to choose, like, do I sacrifice a week on the web.com tour to play in the U.S. Open, or do, and it's really 2 weeks because you're playing a 36 holes on Monday. It's not really a way to prepare for a web.com event, but sacrificing, you know, web tour card, you know, potential PGA Tour card versus playing in a major championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very unfortunate, especially because it's the only way to the PGA Tour, and every start is so valuable. You know, I talked to Brian Ritchie on the range at the Chicago event, and he's like, he's played, I think this week will be his seventh in a row, but he's like, hey, I'm whatever he is, 90th on the money list. He's like, I can't, you know, he had like a top 20 the week before. He's like, I can't take a week off right now. I got to play. So you make guys choose, you know, Canadian guys this week, you know, a lot of guys go up there and play. They're missing on a week again. So now you're looking at missing 2 weeks, possibly you get through at sectionals and you're a Canadian, you're missing 2 weeks and it's your only way to the tour. And
like, yeah, you finish top 15 in the U.S. Open. It doesn't do anything for
you. Exactly.
You saw like Andrew Landry that happened to a couple years ago.
Exactly. I mean, outside of a top 10, and the top 10 doesn't really mean much. It could get you into the web playoffs or whatever, but you're already a web member. Like, it's almost impossible to go the route of Monday qualifying with no status and get to the PGA Tour. Besides money, good money, a top 15 at the U.S. Open is a guy who is 50th on the web.com tour, his 15th at the web event is way more valuable to him than a 15th outside of monetary than a 15th at the U.S. Open.
I wrote an article about this set after Aaron Hills, but so Jack McGuire.
Yep.
So Jack McGuire was a standout at Florida State. He was playing on the web tour that year. He was one of, I think, 15 players that played the U.S. Open from the web tour.
Yep.
Okay, so he was the low web tour player that week at the U.S. Open. I think he finished like T27.
Yep.
And he ends up on the season finishing 82nd
Yep.
On the money list. So top 75 get into Web Tour Finals and have a legit shot at their PGA Tour card.
Yep.
So he finishes 82nd. And I made the argument, like, you know, if he finishes, if he's the low guy of the 15 guys, if you extrapolate that out to a Web field, yep, that's a top 10 finish,
yep,
in a Web event.
And he literally could be on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Because he has four good weeks. I mean, Max Homa is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Like, had a terrible season and four good weeks. Terrible is too strong a word. He didn't have a very good season, snuck in the playoffs. So that week, you know, potentially cost Jack McGuire a PGA Tour card, hypothetically.
And we see it with, like, Doug Gims played really well,
yep,
in a couple PGA Tour events.
Yep.
But he didn't play the Webs those weeks.
Yep.
And, like, so do you think there should be some way for them to share...
Yeah,
some,
I mean,
sort of points.
Yeah, it's got to be some sort of points. If you're going to play events, I mean, how is it that you know, Ryan Yip or anybody, any of the Canadians that are playing this week, like, if he finishes 15th, he just beat a way stronger field than he would have down at a Web event. So there has to be some sort of points. Now, obviously, you have to limit it so people just don't go play PGA Tour events, but, like, Canadians are not going to give up, or guys are not going to give up a chance to play in the U.S. Open or the Canadian Open.
Their National Open.
Yeah, it's their National Open. Like, Ryan can't turn down a chance to go play in his National Open for $1 million. Like, he just can't do it. So there has to be some sort of reward for doing that and making the cut.
Especially since they're run by the same organization.
Exactly. And the goal
is
to get guys...
Except for the U.S. Open's USGA, but, like... You know, you're getting they're getting FedEx Cup,
exactly,
points. Like, how are,
exactly,
you not getting Web points?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can't ask guys to go play in a 36-hole qualifier, get through, make the cut, and then besides monetary, there's no reward for it. Zero. Like, none.
It's crazy.
It's actually a penalty because the guys who didn't get through are at a Web event, all moving ahead of you.
It kind of, like, illuminates, like, the struggle of, like, the guy that the grinder is,
yep,
like, no coverage, but then also the system does no benefits whatsoever.
Yeah, monetarily, or, you know, the system itself. You know, Kyle Thompson, who I interviewed, who's retired and or playing this semi-retired, mostly retired, it is like, you know, I finished 50th on the money list. I'd walk into a 7-Eleven. I knew the cashier was making more money than I was. Like, you know, he's like, I had a family of three. Steve Wheatcroft, I just interviewed, and this is okay to say, but he's looking for a job currently. Like, he said, if I found a good job, I would leave. He said, I'm at that time, they had played four or five events. He was like 50th on the money list. And he's said, Ryan, I'm 27. After my bills are paid, I was about $25,000 in the hole for the year. He's like, what job? He's like, I'm...
And you're one of the 500 best,
yes,
players in,
he's
the,
like,
world.
I'm one of the... Right. I'm like one of the 500 best, and my job has cost me $25,000 this year.
It's an interesting paradigm, though, because part of me, like, on the flip side, thinks that Tiger Woods might be the most underpaid athlete,
oh,
in all of the world.
100%.
Like, you look at the dichotomy of, like, LeBron James makes $40 million a year.
Yes.
And this is, like, you know, a cap, but, like, veteran minimum in the NBA is less than $1 million.
Right.
So, like, Tiger Woods on course earnings is going to be, say, $6 million this year.
Yes.
And, like, the middle of the road PGA Tour player is making two.
Yeah.
Like, that's completely out of whack, too.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, there's been tons of times that I've looked up a PGA Tour player or a guy who's, like, lost his status. And, I mean, Brian Davis would be a perfect example. Like, if I said before I knew that Brian Davis had $14 million in PGA Tour earnings, like, how much – he has no wins, zero wins. He has a European Tour win, but, like, how much money has he made? I would have guessed $5 million. I mean, he made $14 million. Like,
it is the ultimate reward getting the PGA
is.
Tour.
It
and
is.
I think Roberto Castro said something fascinating on the podcast. Was like, I think he said something like, I think the biggest mistake players make is they get on tour and they're like, I'm going to play every week.
Yeah.
Because what happens is it normalizes the fact that you're playing for $7.5 million,
right,
every single week.
Yep.
Or $7 million every week. And, like, I have to limit my schedule so that that feeling is special, because then you treat it the right way. Like, what an opportunity, as opposed to just another week.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chip McDaniel got through. He's one of the few players that a U.S. Open could actually mean something.
Huge,
he's
right?
Yeah. I mean, huge. I mean,
he like just has to make the cut.
Yeah. If he makes the cut, he has, you know, he's in web finals, you know? But of all the other players that don't have, like, this is it's a great week from the standpoint of you get to play in the U.S. Open, but from like a career standpoint, it's somewhat meaningless outside of a top 10.
Chip McDaniel is like one of the best stories of the
year. Yeah,
sure. He's kind of like TJ Vogel was last year, but actually playing well in events too.
Yeah, exactly. And his backstory, I mean, he tweeted out yesterday. I mean, he grew up on a 9-hole course in a tiny little town in Kentucky. I mean, the fact that he's going to be a PGA Tour or at least a Web.com Tour member next year is pretty crazy. I mean, he went to Kentucky, he had a good junior, but I mean, he grew up in a tiny little town. I mean, he calls it the course he grew up on, Hick Pebble, and like, I mean, he grew up in a tiny little town.
What town?
I don't. It's in Kane County. I don't know what the town is, but like,
Perry Maxwell grew up in a tiny town.
Oh, really?
There's a 9-hole Perry Maxwell.
Yeah, oh, really? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I piqued my interest.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about Chip McDaniel.
Yeah,
he's a guy. He got through sectionals.
Like, yes.
What are some other guys that are Monday Q sensations?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That we can watch.
Sure.
Up at Pebble.
So I mean, the local guy from Chicago, Andy Pope. I mean, Andy's been at it for a long time. He turned pro in 2006. I've heard. Did you know that like he made a living or helped? Made a living at Golden Tee. Do you know that?
No.
Yeah. So
one of my good college buddies.
Yes.
Was number two on Glenbard West.
Okay.
With Pope.
Okay.
So like same age.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean he's from Glen Allen obviously, but I posted about Andy. You retweeted it, and a bunch of guys sent me some things about Golden Tee. I guess he'd have to confirm it, but he was like top five in the world on Golden Tee and like help like monetize or help support his playing career.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's a pretty crazy story, but I mean, he's been at it since like 2006. I mean, he's only, you know, he only has five PGA Tour starts and four of them are the U.S. Open. I mean, this will be his sixth PGA Tour start and four of them are U.S. Opens. I mean, he's sectional qualified in four of the last 5 years. It's pretty crazy. He's been a pro for since 2006, been to Q school 12 times.
Where is he playing right now?
I mean, he doesn't play, you know, he plays Florida mini tours.
Yeah.
I mean, he plays a lot of West Florida Golf Tour, minor league tour, Florida Elite Tour, those kind of places.
Last time I saw something about Andy Pope was some random Golf Channel guy was posting about their club championship in Orlando, Andy Pope won.
Yeah.
I was like, Andy Pope?
Yeah. So he's Monday qualified into one web event this year. But yeah, I mean, he's playing like small mini tour events.
I think that's like a perfect example of like the financial like
realities. Yes.
Like this guy probably knows like if he doesn't play around him, he's just going to hemorrhage cash.
Yes. I mean, because the mini tours are so small now, there's no reason to travel. I mean, the Hooters Tour, you know, a winning check was 40 grand. So people would come. But now mini tours are so fractured, no one gets more than, you know, 30, 40.
Bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. You get like three grand. Like you might as well just stay at home and play small tours.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the Canadian tour is so expensive.
Yeah.
The Latin American tour is so expensive to play.
Yeah. I mean, you're only playing for spots up there. You're definitely like burning through cash.
Even the web tour.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, I stayed at Ryan's house, and this was Ryan Yip's house. And I mean, you know, he's like, I'm not making any money. He was struggling to like stay afloat. I mean, Kyle Thompson, Ed Lohr, you know, I mean, Ed Lohr's like won some events in Asia. And he's like, I burned through that cash a long time ago. He's like, that's long gone. So, I mean, there's only one place to really play.
Mm-hmm. And two. European Tour.
Yeah,
two.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So what? Who else?
So Chip McDaniel, Eric Dietrich is a good story. Eric got through at Washington. He won by four. He played the McKinsey Tour the last three. This will be his third year. I mean, last year he made 2 of 10 cuts. His best finish was a T47. He made $1,434.50 last year on the McKinsey Tour. So he was probably in the hole about $20,000, $25,000. And then he went to a minor league tour event at the end of last year and shot 88. I posted about it. I mean, he had 2 9s and a 10, shot 88. Got then at the beginning of 2019, got through McKinsey Tour School or Q School again for the third time. Made the first cut and then shot 67, 65 or something like that yesterday. And again, I think that just speaks to the talent that is out there. Like, this is a guy obviously went through some struggles, but like, he has done nothing as a professional and wins a sectional pretty easily and is going to play in the U.S. Open. I mean, the guy shot 11 under, won by four. And
winning by four is the thing. Like, yeah. It's not just 11.
Right. 11 under doesn't mean much except when the next best score is 7 under.
I think this Cam Young kid from Wake Forest is going to be a really good player.
Yeah.
And I saw he was the only guy under par at his sectional. He shot 4 under. And I was like, that's another reason I like. And he was kind of, he's like a little bit under the radar college stud. But like, it's like another reason to like him. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people know Nate Ashley's story. Nate Lashley's story. I mean, his parents and girlfriend were killed in a car crash. He got through. So, you know, that's a great story.
He was like prolific on the Latin American
tour. Yes. Yes. He had a pretty outstanding. And then speaking of PGA Tour, Colm Tarran is a kid from England. And you don't hear much about China, but his China season last year was one of the most remarkable mini tour. I mean, he won the Order of Merit without winning. So he had he made 14 of 14 cuts. I think his worst finish of the year was T29. I think he had 12 top 25s, 9 top 10s, 10 top 10s, something like that. I mean, he won the Order of Merit over Charlie Saxon, and Charlie had made every cut and had 2 wins, and he still didn't win the money. So he got through. He shot 14 under with 2 doubles. So, I mean, he's had a decent year on the web, but he got through. Another guy, Guillermo Piera, is from Chile and has really struggled in the Latin American tour until this year. He's made every cut and has had like 6 top 10s in 8 events. He got through. I mean, you know, Roberto Castro got through. Connor Arundel is a good story. He went over to Europe and really struggled. He's only had 28 web starts and made 8 cuts over here. He has got into 9 playoffs over a 2-year span on the web Mondays and didn't make one.
Oh my God.
Yes. I think it was 9 or 8. I mean, he would shoot, you know, 65, 66, get into a playoff and lose in a playoff. It was like 8 or 9 over a 2-year span.
So that he's had like the worst bad beats.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty bad. It doesn't get much worse than that. I mean, at least if you just go shoot 72, you can go home.
Play good that day.
Yeah, right.
It's like, didn't have it today.
Right. Like, I mean, he was 6 strokes away from having, assuming he plays well in the event, like web status. I mean, so he got through. TK Kelly, unfortunately, I mean, he tweeted about it. Doubled the last and then bogeyed the.
I saw Garber play the last 4 over.
Yeah.
In his place, he was, I think, 1 shot out.
Yeah. I mean, TK is first alternate, so he has a chance to get in.
He had tough where I think he finished 6th on the Latin American Tour money list 2 years ago. And it's like he only got 1 start on the web.
Yeah.
Like you finish, you play on a tour all year long. Yeah. And this is one of the toughest things about it is like he finished 6 on the money list, played great. He's, you know, a couple $1,000 less than, and he's got, yeah. barely any status.
I mean, that's why they're changing it next year, is because, I mean, like Charlie Saxon is a perfect example. I talked to Charlie at the Chicago event. Had he not played well at the beginning of the year, he could have had no status on the web.com, and he had two wins and made 14 of 14 cuts in China. He's an all-time money leader, all-time wins leader, and he literally, if he didn't play well at the beginning of the season, would have had virtually no status. I mean, the PGA Tour had to change that. You can't expect guys to go play, invest all that money to go play a full season, finish in the top five, and then not give them status based on that. I mean, that's insane.
It's in placing instead more importance on three events that are played over exactly. a 6 week, 8 week period.
Exactly.
Time.
I mean, Michael Buticavelli is a, you know, has been like really good to the account. He won the season ending Latin American, the tour championship, and ended up finishing third on the money list. But his status stunk. He said, in hindsight, I would have skipped the tour championship, rested, and gone to final stage. Because it's a week before. He's like, I would have just rested and played well at final stage, and my status would have been way better than it is now. He's like, I burned myself out, didn't play well at final stage, so didn't improve my status any, and I'm like behind a ton of guys, hardly getting in at any events.
And I think that's the same thing that happens to, like, to me, the guy that finishes second on the web money list,
yeah,
or like third,
right?
Like, that's way more impressive to me, yes, than finishing 90th on the PGA Tour money list.
Yeah.
But they go in, and like, if you don't play well, you're in over 8 weeks, you're SOL.
Yes.
Like, the system rewards mediocrity on the PGA Tour, which to me is going to be very detrimental in the long term because of the way the game's changing, where the tour, I don't think there's not as many 20-year superstars anymore,
right,
because of what's happened with technology, golf. We did a podcast with an economist that it's like we're in this transition period where youth is going to be,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I think, like, from the tour standpoint, they need a massive overhaul because of, like, some of the best players in the world aren't playing.
Yes.
And, like, Scottie Scheffler is a perfect example, mm-hmm, right now. How could you not say he's one of the 100 best players,
right,
in the United States right now?
Yeah, and if he doesn't play, assuming he doesn't win the money title on the web.com, if he doesn't play well the first, you know, in the fall or whatever, he literally could miss a ton of starts.
Yeah.
And his card is gone almost instantaneously, assuming he doesn't have a great finish in the middle of the year.
And that's what this new schedule to me is illuminated with the PGA Tour. Is right. Like, so we go from the PGA, which, yep, is a major nobody's getting into.
Right.
We go to Colonial, which is a limited 122, yep, person field, and they're giving exemptions to Drew Love and Tucker Watkins, guys with no status.
Right.
You know, Drew's got conditional status on Canada. Tucker Watkins might be playing. It might not actually be playing professional, right, golf. I think he's working.
Right.
And then you go from that to Memorial, which is an invite only. It's like some of these guys haven't played in 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, Max Homa is a perfect example of what I think the tour might miss out on. Had he not Monday qualified into the Waste Management, played well there, then top 10 at Genesis, whatever the next week's was.
Yeah, I think it was Genesis.
He's never winning, and we're missing out on a great story and B, a great talent, obviously.
And a great personality.
Exactly. Like, the talent, the there's a lot of guys behind Max Homa that have the same status as Max that didn't play well or didn't Monday qualify in. I mean, he was already at the Waste Management, which is the first third of the season, was already at Monday qualifying status. And had he not done those things in succession and won, we would have never, I mean, obviously a lot of people know about Max, but not to the extent we know about him now, because, like, we didn't get to access, there's a lot of fans who didn't know Max prior to his win and didn't get to see that personality. And there's a lot of guys who don't have status, even though they've top 25 money list on the web last year.
It's a dilemma that golf has, because it seems to me like 20 guys are get all the vacuum. It's like the vacuum. Yeah. And like that's also like detrimental to the game because like, I mean, how many NBA players can an NBA fan rattle off?
Yep.
Hundreds?
Yes.
Like I could rattle off hundreds of NBA players.
Yep.
But like for a regular PGA Tour fan,
right?
Like they only care about 20 people.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was kind of Keith Mitchell was a perfect example. Like they were like, "Oh, he's a nobody." Like he's had a pretty good career. Yeah. Like he didn't get through Q school, went to the Latin American Tour, played really well, went to the web, played pretty well. And got in the PGA Tour and won. He's not a
top 10. Like he Mondayed into Valspar. Right. Top 10.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, he's not like, that's a guy who's a really good player who a lot of people saw his succession as that would end up where he's ended up. Like,
what's amazing, I was looking the other day, his caddy, Crunchy Pete, has more Twitter followers than he does. He's a PGA Tour winner.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, I think that the tour, the Champions Tour especially, or like a lot, all the tours need to like focus on the story of these guys and how talented they are and the struggle that is their reality, because I think it's a human interest story. And I think it humanizes these guys more than what people think pro golf is. Like it's not private jets and caddies that travel with you and those kind of things. It's guys who are broke, flat broke.
Well, I think like that's like the Max Homa thing is a perfect example. I think he tweeted out right after he wins $1.2 million.
Yep.
And he's flying coach.
Yep.
Right after he wins. But like that's a perfect guy that understands, like, I mean, he played an entire season on the PGA Tour and made $9,000. And like, you know, the young guys that make it out there right away, like you see it every, like Grayson Murray bought a Bentley or Maserati and like tour players are like, what are you doing?
Yep.
Like, you know, the instant success, they don't have the perspective that Max Homa has, where Max Homa is so much more relatable to an everyday guy because he's gone through a lot of shit.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I think from a marketing standpoint, people think of golf as an elitist sport, whereas there's, especially in the professional game, such a large majority of players that are definitely not. I mean, I had a guy staying with me in a pony room. So that is like, it's not an elitist sport. It's guys who are ultra talented, who've come from places like Ball State or like South Florida, you know, a small universities who are just trying to make a living. And I think it makes them much more relatable on a human level and helps the game. Not that you shouldn't market Tiger Woods and all those guys. Obviously you could, but there's another large element of the game that's not being covered.
I mean, that I was unbelievably like astonished at Ben Silverman's story, and I didn't know anything about Ben Silverman. And I do a little research. He didn't start playing golf till he was 17.
Yeah, I mean, he shot 118.
Played at a cooking school.
Yeah,
played golf at a cooking university.
Yeah, he shot 118 as a junior or senior in high school at a junior event. I mean, like He's a long shots.
Yeah, he said right after he started playing golf, I'm going to play professional golf.
Yeah.
Like, he started playing at 16.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, how many people must have told the guy he's crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he's the guy who I've run into is like, I'm going to play pro golf. I'm like, oh, no, you're not. Yeah.
And that's like, so like, you know, the ability with golf, I think one of the unique things is like, you see like Zach Johnson played golf at Drake.
Yep.
You know, Adam Svensson played Division II golf.
Yeah.
Ben Silverman played at a cooking school.
Yeah.
Before he went transferred to Florida Atlantic. It's like golf. One of the things about golf is like a lot of times the can't miss guy misses.
Yeah.
And you get these obscure guys that like are better stories in a way because they came from nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm always amazed, to your point, is I'm always amazed every time I look up a player and they're like Barry University, or, you know, I mean, I caddied for, I talked to two guys who played at Stephen M and Zach, I can't remember Zach's name, but they played at a junior college together. Now, it's Indian Hills is a very good community college, but the fact that they had to go to a community college in order to go on to a four-year school, like, that's pretty crazy. I mean, they are, like, there's so much depth of talent out there that didn't come from the Alabamas, Floridas, those kind of things. I mean, Joe Gunderman walked on at Townsend State. I mean, it's not a golf school. It's just a school to play that happens to have golf.
Yeah, so we'll get you out of here with a couple quick hitters. Who's your pick for low qualifier, you know, non-major tour player in the US Open?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be two guys, I think. I mean, Colm Terran and Chip McDaniel. I mean, Chip has played really, really well this year. He just needs an opportunity, a weekly opportunity to play. But, I mean, he's been in the mix at every Monday if he didn't get through. He played well in Puerto Rico, top five. Made the cut at the Valero. I mean, Andy has a ton to play for. A made cut means, you know, he has a place to play regardless next year. So, and if he plays really well, he'll have temporary membership. So, I'd go with him or Colm Terran. I think Colm, you know, had a great year last year, having a solid web season.
Nick Hardy could be a guy.
Nick Hardy, very good too.
He's going to be one of the best players without status.
Yeah, very, very true. And he's played well on Mondays and had some bad luck.
His third U.S. Open he's playing. Yeah. And he made a cut. He made the cut at Chambers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's lost, I think, twice in Mondays for sure playoff. That I know of. Yeah, playoffs.
Like next day playoff. Yep. One of them was. Yeah. That's
rough.
That's about rough. Bad of a beat as you
yeah,
can
get. Exactly.
And then what's the next big thing to look for from the Monday Q's perspective?
I mean, we're gonna do some fun stuff. I mean, hopefully some podcast get going. We're gonna have some like behind the scenes stuff with. I'm gonna caddy in an event. We might have mic'd up things. We're going to follow some players through the year. I mean, I think the stories are always new every week. So I appreciate you having me on and look forward to doing some more stuff.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We'll have to do something before like Q-School or something.
Yeah,
do another
one. Sounds good.
People can find you. You're A Case of the Golf 1 at A Case of the Golf 1 on Twitter. And
in hindsight, had I known this would be this, I would have taken more time to come up with a better handle. But
I wouldn't have named my company after a common food either.
That's true. Yeah, so. I've made my bed now. It's already
it's brutal.
The ship has sailed.
So, all right. Well, thanks for coming on, and excited to have a little more color behind these guys and you.
Awesome.
So,
thanks, man.